Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. The title of our podcast today is Children and Divorce, How to Make the Best of a Tough Situation. We have as our guest today, Douglas Green. Doug has more acronyms after his name than I have ever seen. Some I know, some I don't know. Doug, MA, master's degree, right? Mm-hmm. MFT, marriage and family therapist, but here's where I'm stuck. LPCC.
That's licensed professional clinical counselor. That's very similar to the MFT license, but it is good in other states, and so I got it in case I ever move.
Oh, so but wise. Because I know so many licenses aren't transferable until you take a state exam, right? Like in
right,
law.
Right. And okay. So it's not a guarantee, but it was to increase the odds.
Okay, yeah. And then lastly, RDT?
RDT is registered drama therapist.
Ah, okay, so that factors in for the rest of the bio. So I'm going to read the rest for our audience.
Gotcha.
So Doug is a psychotherapist working in private practice in both West Los Angeles and Woodland Hills, so he's geographically available to all of us. And he specializes in helping children and teens build lives that they can be proud of. Fabulous. We were all children at one time. So, Doug, you grew up in Kansas City, the home of phenomenal food, right?
If you like barbecue.
I
yes.
know, diners, drive-ins, and dives.
Uh-huh.
But you've also
mm-hmm.
lived in Connecticut and Australia. Have you ever visited the Australia Zoo where Steve Irwin and his family took over?
You know, I certainly went to the zoos, but I was there long before he was a name, so I couldn't tell you.
I'm visiting Australia thing. For just that reason.
Oh, wow.
And so now you've lived in the Los Angeles area, I guess, for about 20 years, right?
Oh, 30.
Okay, even more.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that's interesting in your background and how it ties the children in. So you worked in the entertainment world as a writer, director, producer, editor, actor, assistant director, even truck driver. We love that, so you won't run over children.
I came close. I wasn't a very good driver.
Child actors. Plays you've written have won multiple awards, and you've also written some short films, ads, music videos, and a feature film. What's the name of the feature film?
It's called The Hiding Place, and you may associate that title with another movie. There was a Holocaust film that was with the same title.
Oh.
But this one is about a man dealing with his mother losing her mind.
Okay, so we can all relate to that at some point.
And it certainly was a hint that I should go into this field. Yes.
Excellent, excellent. And we're happy you're in it. So Doug brings storytelling and entertainment experience to the therapy office. He also has, well, an MA in psychology, but you attended the Drama Therapy Institute of Los Angeles, mm-hmm. studying theater techniques for therapeutic purposes, and you're now certified in drama therapy.
Oh, that's probably an old bio. Because now I'm a registered drama therapist, which is a higher level. Sorry about that. That's
okay,
my fault.
No problem. So Doug has risen to another level in drama therapy. But here's where it gets interesting, and it'll segue into working with children.
Mm-hmm.
So you're an adjunct professor of child and adolescent psychology at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology and the Phillips Graduate Institute. You've also taught at UCLA in what's called the Pathways Program, which is teaching improvisation for social skills. I totally see how this really works into treating children. And lastly, you created, you write, and you manage a very interesting website called Ask Sherelle, S-H-I-R-E-L-L-E, which helps children, teens, parents, and others around the world with advice from the point of view of a friendly dog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love this. So thank you for all of this, and thank you for joining us on the program
thank
today.
You.
So let's dig in.
Sure.
You have said that the best divorces still produce problems with children. Please explain, and if you could give us a little example story.
Sure, sure. And I could explain for 2 hours, and I know we don't have that time, but fundamentally, for adults, there is such a thing as a good divorce. What you work on, amicable, constructive uncoupling, all these things. For a child, it's almost like saying, was it a good earthquake? Or was that a good bomb that went off? The whole world shifts, no matter what. No matter how good or bad the divorce is, at the very least, everything is mixed up because your entire concept of the world begins with your home. And if you were in a two-parent family, that's the world. That's it. So think of it not in as nice a sense, but think of it like the Wizard of Oz when everything's black and white and suddenly it's color. Whoa, this is a weird world. And it's not as nice as that. Yes, there is so much to say about how to make it as good as possible, how to do it as well as possible, how to reduce the harmful effects. But it's important for parents to realize if you do everything right, you are still creating something that is going to mess with the kid in a way. It may be the right thing to do. I like to think of it like getting shots. You know, you need that baby to get that shot. Was the baby going to like it? No, they hate it. And they're going to hate you for it for a little while, maybe just a minute or so. But you got to do it. The story that I told you a few weeks ago is astounding. There's a little boy I'm working with, and I go and see him at his school. He's in kindergarten. We'll call him Johnny. And Johnny, it doesn't really have any big problems. His parents signed him up for this program where he could get therapy free at the school because they had just divorced. And
it was a good divorce, you said, right?
And I had no idea before much it was. I called Johnny's mother and said, you know, would you be okay coming in? I'd like to just interview you. And she said, absolutely, but Johnny's father will want to be there too. And I thought, I see bad things coming. And she said, no, it'll be all right. So I'm sitting in an office at the school. She comes in, this lovely young woman, sweet, friendly. A couple of minutes later, in walks this nice young man. She stands up. They give each other a hug and kiss on the lips and sit down, holding hands, smile at me and say, so talk to us about our son. And I'm looking, saying, what is going on here? What, didn't you guys get divorced? They said, oh, yes. Yeah, we did. And they explain. They respect each other very much. They cannot live together. They drive each other absolutely nuts. They tried everything. Nothing worked. They just can't do it. They need to split up, be with other people, whatever. But they still live fairly close together. And they, for each of them, the most important thing in their life is their son. So they co-parent very well. Everything's fine. But they know this is going to be tough on him. And they thought, let's have a therapist to go through this, which I think is fantastic. I think we'll talk more about that as we go. I talk with them for an hour or so. It's very nice. They go. I start seeing him on a weekly basis. I get him from his classroom. He and I get along fantastic. We get together. We talk about different things. We play games. I mean, he's 5 years old. And occasionally he will bring up his sadness about the divorce. Maybe it'll come out in a picture, or maybe he'll tell me that I'm really sad because it's going to be Christmas, and that's always with mommy and daddy, and it won't be. And I'll see them both, but this is tough. And it's just, you couldn't have a better kid, better parents. Everything's great. So this one day, a couple of weeks ago, he comes to me and says, I have a secret, Doug. Yeah, Johnny, what's up? I have a sweetheart. What? And he says, yes, there's this girl, Susie, in my class. And I really like her. And she really likes me. And in a couple of weeks, my mommy's going to take us. We're going to see Frozen 2. And this is just too much to believe. It's just too great. I get him back to the classroom, and Susie runs up to him. Susie must weigh 40 pounds. She's skin and bones, pigtails sticking straight out from her head, glasses that are bigger than the size of her head. And she's so happy to see him, and he's so happy to see her, and they hug, and it's just adorable in every way. Next week, I come in, I sign in at the front office, and they say, oh, you see little Johnny, don't you? And I said, yeah. I said, can you talk to the principal? Because he was in the principal's office yesterday. Really? Okay, sure. I go in and sit down with the principal and say, what's going on? And she says, I don't know. I need you to figure this out. Johnny's been a sweet kid all year. He punched another kid in his class in the face. Really? What did the little boy do? No, it wasn't a boy. It was a girl. Her name's Susie. Susie? He loves Susie. No way. He couldn't have done that. Yes. And he sat in here and he was so sad and so upset. And I just can't figure out what's going on. None of us can figure it out. So, okay. I go to his room. I take him out. He's happy to see me. Everything's fine. We go to our little room. We sit and he's drawing a picture. And I say, so I heard you had a rough day yesterday. And he gives me a big pout and nods. And I say, what happened? And he says, well, we were having recess. And I was outside. And some of the other children were inside playing board games. And I walked in to where they were. And I wanted to join in. And I said, can I get in the game? And Susie said, no. And it broke my heart. So I punched her in the face. Oh, okay. Okay, well, I can see that. I can see that. And a couple of minutes later, I said, you know, do you think maybe it would have worked out better if you had just said, hey, that really hurts my feelings? And he looks up at me in shock. No! I would never do that. I love her. That would really hurt her. And I'm just as befuddled as your face is right now, Judy. I'm just lost. And we talk more. He has learned the rules. He is never to get in a fight at school, never punch anybody at school. He is never to hit a girl ever as long as he lives for any reason. It's like his parents have done this, his teachers, everything's fine. But I'm still completely lost. And I get up to the office, and of course there are two phone messages for me, one from Dad, one from Mom, saying, urgent, call me now. And I know this is going to be tough, and I go home and call the Meech and say, look, I'm not going to report you. It's not that. But I have to know, did you guys get violent in front of him? And they each said, no, never, never. Nothing. We didn't even scream at each other in front of him. There certainly was screaming other times, but and both said no, the other one was never physically violent with them. And so I'm just lost. And I'm trying to figure this out and struggle and struggle and struggle. And it takes a couple of hours before, luckily, the light bulb goes off. And I call the mom and say, just to make sure I've got it straight. You guys never physically fought and you never screamed at each other in front of him. Never. But did you ever talk about the fact that you were going to split up? Did you talk about the feelings? Did you talk about what was wrong? Did he see that? She said, well, yeah, sure, some. I said, did you ever cry? And she said, well, of course I did. I love my husband. That's it. That little brain, that little 3 or 4 year old brain, looked and saw that by telling his feelings, Daddy made Mommy cry. That's the worst thing Daddy ever did to Mommy.
I see.
Daddy never did anything else bad to Mommy. But by saying, you've hurt me, you're making me sad, you're making me angry, that's the worst thing you can do. Mom says, I think you're right. I call Dad. Oh my God, I think you're right. Dad goes over to Mom's house. They sit down, talk with him. No problems the rest of the year. It absolutely goes through fine. The one thing I got to throw in here about children, just because I'm such a fan, is to say that that day when I talked with him, the day after he'd gotten in trouble, I took him back to his room. Susie runs up, arms wide open, smiling, gives him a hug, and all that. Kids are just astounding. Just astounding. I have to throw that in.
That really is amazing. And the thing that it kind of tells me is you can think you're doing everything right, and you can't really be doing everything right.
You are. They are. They are the best couple I've ever known for getting a divorce.
You really don't know how the children are going to process information. You just don't know.
I will say the guarantee is that they will process something incorrectly. Just like when you're learning language and they say, you know, you got the bestest dog. Their logic is putting that in there. I'm the goodest kid. They're not wrong, but they're wrong.
Yes.
And in the same way, he was right based on the information he saw. He was absolutely correct. He took it to a conclusion that was not. But, you know, it worked out okay. And if you go see Frozen 2 and there are a couple little five-year-olds holding hands in front of you.
It could be them, Johnny and Susie.
And I didn't think of this till right now, but what's the theme of it? Let it go. Let it go.
Oh, my God. That was great. That was a really good story. And thank you. And I think this really will help any parent listening to this just to say, do the best you can, and you cannot avoid complications.
Right.
You just can't. Be sensitive to them, but you can't. We're going to deal with that in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we were talking to prepare for this interview, you said that it's a...
You're sounding like a lawyer now.
I'm sounding well-studied.
There we go.
Interview.
You
said that it's a soul-crushing nightmare, quote-unquote, when parents use their children inappropriately through and after the divorce.
Right.
What are the ways in which parents behave that negatively affect their children? What were you referring
to? So... take that couple I was describing, put them at one end of a spectrum. I'm talking about the other end because they did everything right. As I said, especially a little child, but even older, even a young adult or an older adult. I don't think my parents are going to split up now. My mom turns 90 in February, so I think they're good, but if it happened today, it would really jar me a lot.
Absolutely.
A child's view of the world, as I was saying, is based on this. Were you living here, Judy, in 94 when the earthquake happened?
I sure was.
Okay, so you remember it was this big, giant earthquake. Shook everything, shut all the lights out, all that stuff. But remember how for the next few days there were aftershocks all the time? And I'm from the Midwest originally, so I spent the first, few decades of my life walking on solid ground. Maybe step on ice, but everything was solid down there. Suddenly, I didn't know when I put my foot down whether the earth would be shaking or not, because there were so many of those things.
Mm-hmm.
It really messed with my head. What's real? I think that's a pretty good metaphor for a child going through a good divorce, like this little Johnny we were talking about. If you make it worse, it is the kid's entire center of gravity is lost.
But what are the examples of making it worse?
The easiest one, the one that, of course, the lawyers and the judges tell you cannot do, is alienation. talking down the other parent is the worst. Putting them down, insulting them. Don't forget, you're not insulting your ex to that kid. You're insulting their parent. So, and I will say, sadly, what I see most often is the parent of the same sex insulting the other one. Or, I'm sorry, the other way. The parent of the opposite sex insulting the other one. Therefore, if my mom tells me my dad's a terrible guy, well, as a boy, that's my role model. That's who I'm aiming for. That's what all the computer programming in my head is saying to be like, and I'm suddenly being told this is a horrible person.
Nobody said that yet. This is the first time anybody said this, and it makes such sense.
And of course, it's the same with the opposite parent too.
But
when you do that, you're just messing with everything that kid has. And I'll say it's really difficult because at the same time, we as humans want answers. We want to know why something happened. Why did 9/11 happen? I want an answer. Why did World War II happen? I want a simple, clear answer. Don't give me 12 volumes of world history to try to explain. No. What was it? Hitler was crazy. Okay, that's good. Great. If that kid is looking for answers as to why this happened, and if they come to you and you say, as I know we will get to later, they might say, was it my fault? No, you didn't do anything. Of course not. It was just us. Well, why? What was it? And you want to have an answer, but if you say, because your father's a cheating bastard, that's a problem. So what do you say? And it's difficult. It's really hard.
Okay, so can you give an example of a very difficult divorce where maybe one parent did more harm than the other parent?
Oh my gosh.
And the kids are living with the parent who did less harm, but that parent is angry.
You're saying more harm in the divorce, it was more at fault.
In the marriage. So how should the parent who supposedly did less harm but is very hurt and has the children?
And this is exactly my point. It's I'm going to say it's impossible. It's impossible to do it right. If you do your best, that's the best. That really is the best you can do. But if you say, let's say you and I got a divorce, and I had cheated on you, and I'd said I'm not interested in you anymore. I don't want anything to do with this. And I did this all in one night. You know, you're devastated. You're a complete wreck. The kid, of course, is. Our child is. And they say to you, why did this happen? You could say, Daddy didn't love Mommy anymore the way he once did and wanted to be off alone. But that way, he wanted to live separately.
There is no right thing.
But I'm saying that would be really good. Because if you say Daddy doesn't love Mommy, then that kid's struggling with the fact that that Daddy never loved Mommy. I've been living an illusion all this time.
Okay.
But if you say Daddy doesn't love Mommy the way he did, it's got nothing to do with you. That's about as good as it can get.
And just the one catch-all is never, ever, ever speak negatively about your other spouse. Ever, certainly not when the other spouse is not around, right? No derogatory remarks.
And I will say, absolutely never, and I'll bet that's impossible.
I think so.
So forgive yourself when you do it.
Okay. So let's just say it slips out.
Yes.
So what should a parent do to pull it back?
To try to reel it back in?
Yeah.
I would say, if they catch themselves, which is wonderful if they do, to say to the kid, wow, you know how sometimes you get angry and say things you don't mean? I just did that. It happens to me too.
That's great.
You know, that would be great. I think you might win the Nobel Prize for catching yourself in that moment and
really
doing it.
That's really wonderful.
But more likely, you won't catch yourself in the moment, but later on, when your kid brings up that you said it and you go, oh my God, I did, that something like that would be great to say.
Okay. All right. That's excellent, because we all get frustrated, right? And things come out. So let's go to that next part that you said we were going to refer to, and that is when a child is confronted with divorce, you said he or she experiences magical narcissism.
Yeah.
What is that? That's interesting. I haven't heard that phrase either.
Well, I was saying that children live in that as a normal thing. And I don't know if that's an official term.
But you live in a
magical world. A child lives in a magical world.
They are at the center of the entire universe.
Okay. And they know they're at the center of yours. And they also are at the center of Santa Claus's universe. And do you know Santa Claus brings gifts to about 1 billion children in one night? How does he do that? That's amazing. Well, you don't figure that out until you're about 6 or so. Your brain isn't going there. And when you're going through the divorce thing, being as aware as you can of where your child is developmentally. And again, give yourself a break. You won't get it completely right. But with that magical narcissism, the way it came into our conversation is when you are the center of the universe, things that happen are because of you. And it is incredibly frequent, especially, let's say, ages 4 to 6, maybe 4 to 7, that the child will believe they are responsible for the divorce. And we think, how the hell can you believe that? And that kid says, Daddy was mean last night. He was in a bad mood and he was mean. And he was so mean and he yelled at me for something that he shouldn't have yelled at. I wished he'd just go away. And this morning he went away. I did that. It's the most horrible thing I've ever done. I'm horrible. Mommy's crying. I'm the worst thing ever. And to get in there and just say to that kid, and not once, 1,000 times, in 1,000 different ways, this is not your fault. No child can ruin a marriage. It's impossible. If anybody could have, it would have been me, and my parents are still together. So, no, you just can't. I mean, just think of, you know, the worst kids in the world. It's like, why would the parents choose to split up because of that kid? It's just, that's not what you do.
Right, but this is the way
send the kid away.
Think.
Yeah,
yeah, but so, this is the way children think.
Absolutely. And they will remember every time they got yelled at. And your daddy doesn't like it when you do that. You know, they'll have all those things are in there, and they will put it together to say this.
And that's their ledger. They're accounting for why you two are, mom and dad are getting
absolutely
divorced.
And then at different ages, there's other logic too. You have the thing where, as I said, we want a simple answer. And so let's say 12-year-olds aren't really going to be that interested in, okay, so Doug cheated on Judy and fell in love with this other woman. But Judy had been really, you know, distant for years and had shamed Doug on a lot of issues and would always insult his parents. And suddenly it's a little more equal. I did the bad thing. I did the bad deed. But it wasn't
it was
that you were perfect.
To a certain, or it could be equalized.
It slightly equalized. Okay. It's my fault, but you're not perfect. And that's a bit much for a kid's brain to take. They look for the villain. Who's the good guy in the story? Who's the bad guy?
Of course.
You know, there's got to be a jump. And I've never studied this, but it'd be interesting to find out when they really get the idea that Darth is Luke's father, but he was a good guy. But even there, he was a good guy who went bad. What's the age when you get to where you're willing to accept you know, Michael Corleone and take somebody who's both, you know. So I don't know exactly, and I'd kind of like to play with that idea sometime, but there's to get kids to understand that even if someone's at fault, they get to still love both parents. They get to still trust both parents.
And they want to, and they will. That is our natural. Because I remember when I was in high school, my sister and I are 1 year apart, and my dad came to us and said, I think I have to leave. I think we need a divorce. We panicked. Now, we were in high school. Mm-hmm. We completely panicked, and we begged him not to. He didn't. We begged him not to. So we just couldn't deal with the idea of that. Mm-hmm. We just couldn't face it. And
I had a thing
and
much
you're
younger,
adult but... enough to know things kind of aren't copacetic.
Right.
But it's about you.
Right.
You, the kids, couldn't take it.
Yeah.
And so could you just please for us? Amazing. It is amazing.
It's amazing. It worked. That's a one in a million shot. It's funny. As you say this, I'm reminded of a time when I was seeing a little boy who was maybe 8 or 9, and his mom had told me they were going to get divorced. Mm-hmm. And dad lived in another city. They had a long-distance relationship, so it wasn't totally a shock to me. But she said, can I tell them in your office? And them, meaning him and his younger brother, who was maybe 3 or something. And so we had a session. She came in, and she told them, and my client started crying. I don't think he was totally surprised, but
just hearing it was the reality.
Hearing it was crying.
Yeah.
But the little one just went into this sort of violent rage, not breaking anything, but stomping around the room going, no, 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 shaking his head. It's like you could see it right there. The brain couldn't accept it. This was too much to take. And that's in all of us. That was in you as a teenager.
Yeah.
I
will never forget that scene in the kitchen ever. Okay, I want to move on. So we were talking about the best way parents should handle divorce for the best outcome of their children. Mm-hmm. And in that piece of the conversation, you started talking about pre-divorce therapy.
Yeah. I've had it a couple of times where someone calls me and says, we have decided we're going to separate, and that almost certainly will lead to a divorce. And I want my children to be prepared for this, so I'd like to set them up in therapy and create the relationship. And it's wonderful.
When you say create the relationship, what do you mean? With me.
Okay. So they have that relationship. Okay. It's not that we're getting divorced and now go talk to a stranger about your feelings. They want to do that. But beyond that, it meant that I was working with the kids, talking with the parents about when would be good to do different things based on how the kids were doing. And it's still going to, like with little Johnny, it's still, there will be problems when it happens. The kids will act out in some way. But I think it's the best harm reduction you can possibly do.
Because in my head, as you were saying it, it's like the safety net has already been provided before the act takes place.
Right.
The act of two households.
There's a safety net. There's a place for expression where that is open to it. If it's more than one kid, they get to come in and whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Jump on me and punch me if they want. You know, whatever they need to do, or it comes out in art
to deal with their cheating feelings.
In a board game, whatever. But it's
right.
You know, but they do it in a room where it's acceptable,
right.
And it gets worked out, and it leaves them stronger from this than they otherwise would be.
So I love this. I had never heard, with all the people, the therapists I talked to, I'd never heard this. And so I just want to reinforce for anybody listening and anybody you know about to tell the children and start the process of divorce, mm-hmm. pre-divorce therapy, I thought was such a great idea.
It will pay off. It may sound like you're spending more money at the time that you're already afraid you're going to spend money, I'll say you will save tens of thousands if you do it.
I bet you're right. I completely bet you're right.
Yeah, that versus rehab, you know.
So something else that I thought was important. Two last things before we close.
Sure.
You said that at different ages, children have different issues, to include developmental issues at different ages, cultural issues, religious issues. But the one I want to focus on for this discussion is sexual issues, and here's why. You said the sexual relationship between their parents, that's how we know our parents, they have a sexual relationship. The way that changes in divorce and how divorce affects the children at their core identity. I thought that was huge when you said that.
Thank you. And we've talked already about, you know, talk to a five-year-old about their parents' sex.
Don't talk down to the father if you're talking to the son.
Right. I mean, that aspect. But where the sexual stuff comes in more is when the kid starts becoming more sexualized, let's say 12 years old. Their hormones are acting up. They're looking other ways. They're getting crushes, whatever. And suddenly,
they're turning inward too a lot, right?
Very often turning inward. And their basis still, even if they're rebelling against it, saying, no, my parents are the stupidest people in the world. You know, if they're more mature 12-year-olds, most of us don't say it until we're 15. But, they're still inside them, that parental unit is their model of romance, maybe along with fairy tales or movies or whatever. And suddenly, mom and dad are splitting up, right? When I'm trying to figure out who I am as a man, as somebody who would ask a girl out after years of, you know, throwing frogs at them, whatever. Suddenly, this is confusing. And let's say they split up because dad has a girlfriend. What does that say about my sexuality? It's
my responsibility as a man or my responsibility as a woman.
Well, I better shut that down. I had better shut it down because it does terrible things. And my sexuality is a horrible thing. So I had better, you said, withdraw hugely and not grow up. And we're talking heteronormatively here, but with gay kids, lesbian kids, transgender kids, all these things, if anything, more trouble because there already was more confusion and more hiddenness, shame, whatever. But sticking with the heteronormative, the little girl who wants to trust a boy, who wants to kiss a boy, wants to go out with somebody, suddenly her sexuality is being shut down because it's something terrible. Look at the harm it does. Look at how I was better off as a little girl.
Or could it work in the opposite, where you try and overcome?
I think that's what comes next.
And become, a little bit more.
Right. And so, again, I'm going back to that thing about the what made sense is gone. So, yes, you shut it down. You overcome it. I'm going to sleep with every boy in class because that way I'll never be victimized. You know, however it works.
Yes.
And the biggest thing I would say with this, and I would say with every issue we've talked about, is you already know that your kid isn't like any other kid. You know that if you're a parent. If your kid is more than 3 months old, you know this is a complete unique being. Similarly, there is no right answer. Nothing I've said today is the way to do it. The thing is, keep paying attention to that kid. Ask how they're doing. And then there's a very good chance, A, that they're not telling you what's going on, and B, that they don't even know. So you got to check in other ways too. I was seeing a client this week who, it's not a divorce issue, this kid lost a parent. One of her parents died a couple of years ago. That's why I started seeing her. And normally we have fun sessions. She's very playful, very, very, I'll say aggressive in her play. Yesterday, she was just kind of mean and saying like, wow, did anything special happen this week? No. Was Halloween okay? Yeah, it was fine. Kept going on through the session, just trying to cause trouble. And I kept saying, you sure nothing interesting happened this week? And finally, right at the end of the session, well, no, except that my uncle is having an operation, uncle who she lives with.
Oh,
and his wife is having another operation next week. And this kid had lost a parent. And suddenly, whoa, you know, the whole session changes and becomes, those are both operations no one's going to have. They're not dangerous. And me talking about my history with operations, let me tell you what it was like when I was on painkillers. Let me tell you how funny it was. Blah, blah, blah. Normalizing, relaxing the situation. But if I hadn't picked up that something was different about her, mm-hmm. nothing would have worked. And, you know, she would have left and thought, because she said she thought I knew. She assumed that they had told me. And no, nobody told me. So just every way you can.
Every way you can. But I do want to say that because I deal with this in mediation, you can't prevent anything. But you can certainly prevent the most extreme of anything happening if you are mindful about yourself, if you don't blame the other parent, if you don't throw loose negative comments out, if you don't use the kids as messengers between parents. I know, it's the worst of
yes. all. Yeah, just
so, I mean, there
don't.
Are things you can do to make it better than the worst case it could be, and then or you could make it the worst case it could be.
Right.
And it's your choice. I mean, it's really your choice.
Exactly.
Okay, lastly, I want to ask one thing, and that mm-hmm. is, what are the best ways in which parents can introduce new partners into the relationship? Because mm-hmm. it comes so fast and furious sometimes before the kids can even have an opportunity to process two households, all of a sudden there's a third person in the mix.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about these questions earlier today, and I thought, I was born in the 60s, and there's an enormous amount for people my age, there was an enormous amount of this in the entertainment we got. The Brady Bunch was new family being introduced.
Right, that's right.
The Sound of Music is a new mother being introduced.
Oh.
All these different things. And in the most innocent, sweet ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those obviously are a little too perfect. But in another sense, they're kind of good models in that if the child likes that other person, and you don't need to mention it once that they're your girlfriend or your boyfriend, let them get to know this friend. Let that get normalized.
But how do you introduce them?
As a friend,
okay.
I would say at the beginning. And more sophisticated kids are going to pick things up sooner.
You just told the children you're getting divorced. Maybe there's another relationship on the side, and that's why the divorce is happening.
Uh-huh.
The kids are starting to process. This is a very new situation.
I would say...
Is there any amount of time where a parent should wait in their opinion?
Yeah, and it's with everything else I've been saying, it's not a fixed amount of time. It's wait till that kid's feet are on the ground, and preferably have been on the ground for a while. You don't need to do it. The fact is, when you chose to have a kid, you made that the primary relationship of your life. And as you may, you can say, I didn't fall in love with that kid. I fell in love with somebody else. That's fine. But your responsibility is to that kid. And if you now have fallen in love with somebody else, great. Good for you. How's the kid? What's the kid doing? And follow that way. introduce them in a way that might be okay. And they may not be somebody who plays well with kids. That's okay.
Right.
That doesn't matter. I'd also say one thing that I see all the time is step parents or whatever, the other person taking it personally that the kid has negative feelings toward them. I'm like, get over yourself. They're going to. That's going to be there. In the long run, they may totally adore you.
Yes.
I have an aunt who married a man who had kids. And when they divorced, the kids were more loyal to her than to him. Because she'd been such a wonderful stepmom.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
But,
well, you know, this is not a law, but organically, people started coming to me over the past couple of years when it was time to write their settlement agreement, which becomes mm-hmm. the divorce decree.
Yeah.
And in the custody and visitation section, people were telling me to put this in. Introducing new partners will not happen unless it's a 6 month to 1 year committed relationship so that there's no more change in the child's life, a little more stability, and if possible, introduced to the other ex-spouse first so the kids mm-hmm. don't have to worry that they're being disloyal to the other parent by not saying or not feel like they're in the middle holding information that is only theirs and not the other parents. What do you think about that?
Boy, I would say it drastically depends. I like the idea of letting the other parent know first. Not necessarily introduced. It may be a phone call.
Okay.
But just that may not be convenient.
Okay.
You two may not be able to be in the same room together or whatever it might
be.
Well,
I know it depends.
But,
I know.
But the 6 month to a year of relationship, I feel like, let's say, again, you and I are married. We've had more marriage here than...
Right, and I'm expecting presents at the end
okay.
of this interview.
Oh, no, you're getting a letter from my lawyer. if you and I are married, and I realize, you know what? I wasn't born to be married. I'm just not. I'm a guy who likes to fool around, date, might be with somebody a month or two, but that's it.
I never thought about it that way.
And then we leave, and maybe it's even pretty amicable, and you want that steady relationship. Should I keep every woman I meet away from the kids forever for the duration of my life?
I see your point.
Now, if we have 6-year-olds, hell yeah, they don't need to meet her. That's just going to get confusing. But if it was 16-year-olds, and, oh, that's who daddy's with this month. Okay, that's daddy. You know, okay.
All right.
It's
a different way to lie. I'd never thought of that other situation that you just said. I'm just not the marrying kind.
I'm
just not the steady relationship kind.
Right. I don't think Hugh Hefner had to keep everybody away from his...
Did he have daughters?
My daughter took over the company.
I honestly don't remember the rest.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about it.
But I'm saying, again, I just keep going back to this is so not one size fits all.
Mm.
It's so drastically important. And again, why, of course, I'm going to push the idea of getting that kid a therapist, because that can be a real help for the parent. Call the therapist and say, do you think the kid's ready to meet my girlfriend? Fantastic.
Excellent.
You know, and the therapist could say, you know what, give me a month. Let me work on it in the sessions and talk about stuff.
Oh, brilliant.
You know,
that could
be fantastic.
Okay,
and,
that's great.
You know, it's just the better you can, I'm sounding stupid, the better you can be is the better you can be. It's just the more you try, and I don't mean...
To be sensitive, to be in tune.
To listen.
To just make it easy.
To pick up from them.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm really, I know you're kind of coming to an end, and I want to go back to that thing at the beginning about there is no such thing as doing it perfectly. You have torn their world apart. You have ripped it up.
Do the best you can. Don't blame yourself and be in touch with your children.
And
those are the three good takeaways.
Those are great. Okay. Those are great.
All right.
Yeah.
And more on this, you can talk to Doug directly, because Doug, how can people reach you?
You probably best could find me at my website, which is douglasgreenmft.com, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-G-R-E-E-N-M-F-T, like Mary Frank Thomas, .com. There's a contact thing on there. You could certainly write me. I'd love to talk to anybody about this. You do not have to be a prospective client.
Okay,
you know, you can be in
You can be somebody
country.
That knows somebody. Doug, thank you so much. I really appreciate that you came here.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate that all of you have listened to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast for amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, and you can reach me at my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. I hope you all found this beneficial. I certainly did, and I have cats, so we will talk to you in the next episode.